Now I'm here with Commander Chief Master Sergeant Dustin Hall. Now you are the highest ranking enlisted person at Beale Air Force Base. Is that right?
Yes, sir. As the command chief of 9th Reconnaissance Wing, I'm the enlisted position is the highest position, enlisted position on base. Yes.
Okay, so for anybody who maybe doesn't understand the military so well, you got the enlisted guys, and then you got the officers.
Yes, sir.
And when I say guys, I mean personnel.
Right.
What's the difference? I mean, if you're so you're the highest ranking on the enlisted side, but I mean, how do you guys draw that line? How does it separate in terms of culture or maybe even authority?
Yeah, so it really, I guess, to keep it in the most simple terms, right, our officers are given a charge, and they have the potential to become on G-series orders to make command decisions.
Okay.
I think the general makeup is, what I stick to is about 65, 35 enlisted to officer population across our military services.
Okay.
So the majority of us are enlisted, and we will absolutely carry out any of the orders and directives put out by the officers. And the schooling part is, you know, they'll go to a commissioning academy, whether that be out at the Naval Academy or the U.S. Air Force Academy, and they'll get a commission, a bachelor's degree, and they'll become an officer.
So thinking about the cultural differences, my son was in the Marines, and so I spent time around him while he was going through boot camp, and I saw him through School of Infantry, and I saw him in and around different times, and I could see a cultural shift in his in the Marine Corps, and I heard that from him. So how would you contrast maybe what is in the Air Force to the Marine Corps in terms of the division between officers and enlisted?
Yeah, so fortunately, Mark, I've had a chance to serve in a few joint assignments. I was just talking to your son downstairs about this, and there is definitely a difference between the way the Marines enlisted an officer interact versus the way the Air Force officer interact. And culture-wise, you know, I like to look at it as, you know, I like to be on the same page as my boss, right? And my boss being Colonel Andrew Clark, the commander of the 9th RW. And if I'm strategically linked up with my boss, I can carry his message so I can lead the formation to get after his desired end state. This is a stark contrast to maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago where it was just go do, right? So it'd be an officer saying, hey, corporal, hey, sergeant, go do. And then that individual marches off. Then we still need some of that, but I also need to be able to carry and understand my boss's message so that we can get the formation after it.
So thinking about this, so you report right up to the chief, the man, I guess, at Beale.
Yes,
there's how many employees or how many people under the command total at Beale?
Right.
Thousands,
so,
right?
There's about 7,000 active duty civilian and contractors and guard and reserve folks that are getting after it every day on Beale.
Okay, so then all the enlisted guys, you said 65% of that number, do they report up to you?
They all have their own chain of command within their own organizations on base. For instance, you had Colonel Shannon Juby out here a few weeks ago. She has the MSG, so all of her enlisted and lower-ranking officers will report up through her group,
okay.
And then she reports to Colonel Clark. And then there are some instances where they'll report to the command chief, but ultimately I report to Colonel Clark as well. So
how many people are you responsible for?
Honestly, responsible one, and that's
you.
That's right, and I'm responsible for I like to think I'm responsible for getting the team motivated to get after Colonel Clark's mission, which also gets after, you know, General Goldfein, the chief of staff of the Air Force, ultimately runs up to the president, and we get after some national security strategy objectives.
Okay.
So,
and how many people are underneath your? How would I phrase it correctly? Underneath your command, I know you're responsible for you, but there's people that rely on you for direction.
Right. I would say all of them. You know.
Okay.
So I think I influence. I would hope to be able to influence all 7,000 of those individuals in one way or another. Again, to motivate, to inspire, to develop them to get after higher objectives.
Okay, so I think there's a lot of similarities in business in terms of developing personnel to what we might see out at Beale. But talk to us about your leadership style. You're obviously extremely humble. I love that. I recognize that just by the way you've answered these first few questions. I saw that in Andy Clark. He was on the show. And everybody, Shannon was the same. You guys are all so humble. And I think that's a great start for a leader. But, I mean, I'm thinking about how would you describe your leadership style? Because we all are a little bit different in the way we influence people.
Yes, sir. I'm a firm believer that particularly in an organization with 7,000 people or an organization with 100 people, you talk business or a military organization, that you all have to be on the same page, right? You all have to be integrated. There has to be inclusion. We have to know what our teammates are doing. We have to respect and understand what they're trying to get after so that we can all get after the larger thing, the why, right? Mm-hmm. The bigger why of why we're here. I like to think that I can kind of, you know, blur those lines between one organization and another organization that, hey, you need to know what they're doing. They need to know what you're doing. Let's walk a mile in their shoes so that we can get after this Colonel Clark or General Goldfein or whatever, the bigger why of why we're serving. That's firmly, I think, where I'm at right now, Mark, is that we need to be able to work together and come together. And as you know, it's not always easy. And you got to motivate different people, different ways to get after those goals. So team building, inclusion, respect, and get after the why.
You know, when I talk to my son, I always think of his job being when he was in the Marine Corps. You know, his job was an infantry guy, kill people, break things, stuff like that. So those are kind of like his why. He's out there to, you know, to go to war, I suppose, when he's called upon, or battle when the time is right. In the meantime, you are training like crazy to be ready. But thinking about your why in your job at Beale, how might it differ from what, you know, a conversation that I might have with my son?
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. So my why has absolutely changed between the time I was E1 back in 1996 and until now, 2019, as an E9. The why changes because your scope of influence and responsibility changes, right? My why widens. The why that we get after is clearly Colonel Clark's why, right, and mission and objective. But his why is General Goldfein. And ultimately, like I said, it's laid out in national directives, as strategic directives, what we got to get after as a nation to defeat our adversaries, right? Mm-hmm. That's the why. I mean, every day we come to work, we have to understand, hey, what are we doing today to make sure that our adversaries aren't getting ahead of us? It sounds simple, right? It sounds kind of like, okay, that's kooky, Chief. Like, what are you doing? But if I fail 1 or 2 days or 3 or 4 or 5 days, if I'm not getting after my why, then the enemy is getting ahead, right?
Yeah.
In some form or fashion.
Well, how do we stack up? You know, we always talk about the military in the U.S. is the strongest in the world. We know that there are other countries that are emerging and strengthening in different ways. How would you say we stack up? Are we on the upswing? Are we gaining ground? Are we losing ground? How would you characterize our position?
There is zero doubt in my mind that we are still the most formidable military in the entire world, period. And that goes across all 4 or 5 branches of our military. There are niche things within each service that have atrophied because of 19 or 20 years of desert warfare, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah.
We've kind of been jumped in some other things. But, again, I think in the last couple of years we have made up that ground in those things. I have zero problem saying that we are still the most formidable, and a lot of it is because of the people. This is an all-volunteer force, right? And that 65% of our force currently joined after 9/11. So we have all these folks that raise their hand knowing what they're getting into. We've been at war since late 90s, right? And they're still joining, right? Yeah. They're joining to do this. They're joining to fight for the freedom and protect the flag that we value so much. So that's right there is what makes us the best military in the world.
Why'd you join?
I joined before 9/11, if you didn't do the math. But I'm part of the 35% who joined prior to 9/11. I joined because I joined at 21 to get out of a situation that I was in. And we all joined the military for different reasons. My reason was what I was doing and, you know, playing college football, and the grades weren't supporting me to do much anything else after that. You know,
Where'd you play football?
I was down in Rio Hondo Community College down in Southern California. Punter, and backup quarterback.
You don't look like a punter. You look like you could hit somebody. I mean,
I was 189 pounds when I joined the military. So I've had a lot of defect food since then. You know, I was the guy who had great grades during football season, and then once football season let out, you know, wasn't interested in school. And I remember sitting in a parking lot one day saying, man, you're like, nobody in that building at 7:30 in the morning cares if I go in there. Hmm. Like, nobody, it wasn't high school, right? Nobody cared that I went into that building and got my education. So I went home, told my dad, say, I'm going to go enlist. And then, so December 27th of 95. I enlisted in the Air Force at the age of 21.
Well, the smart guys typically join the Air Force, right? Were you, because you may think, my dad was actually a super sharp guy and was in the Air Force. Son and me, not quite so smart. He ended up going to the Marines. We joke about that, but I mean, you guys really are pushing the technology and things like that in the Air Force as compared to maybe some of the other branches, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, at the risk of offending my host, the Air Force does have a little bit of a technological acumen that's different, but I will tell you, this has also changed in my 23 years. Some of the smartest people that run the Pentagon are not Air Force individuals. They could be from the Army, or the Marines, and the Navy, and the Coast Guard. So I was fortunate enough, I did take the ASVAB, scored very well. I think the Air Force was my only stop that day. I might have gone. If I had to keep going, I might have kept going. That knowledge or that acumen gap you speak of, sir, that does not exist after serving with some joint partners the last few years. We are all crushing it.
Well, you know, I always think about what does the term patriotism mean. So you think about 4th of July and Independence Day, Declaration of Independence, and then, you know, where do people fall in love with our country? I mean, some of us, you know, we were born here. You almost take it for granted at certain points, but then certain things happen in your life where you're like, you know what? I love this country. Was there ever a moment for you where, like, I know my patriotism is kicking in?
So I'll be honest. You know, there's two things we talk about. It's when you're, you know, the date that you're in the Air Force, and then the date the Air Force is in you. It's kind of just a mindset, right? And it was by all means, it was 9/11. So, I was at Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska. My dad was in upstate New York, but I didn't know where he was at the time. So I just knew he was in New York on a business trip. And then that all went down, and that absolutely kicked in at that point. Yeah. It's been red, white, and blue ever since then, and bold red, white, and blue with underline and, you know, italics the whole bit. So
you were like, where's my dad?
I was for a little bit. Yeah, I got my mom on my flip cell phone, and he was up in Syracuse area. So still couldn't get home because he canceled all flights. So he took him a couple weeks to get home. But
all of America was affected 9/11, and I could only imagine being in the military at that time going, okay, what does this mean? I mean, what went through your mind? Obviously, okay, you started bleeding the red, white, and blue in a more different way. But, I mean, what did that mean for you in terms of, like, preparing for a different scenario in your life? Because I'm wondering, besides emotionally and maybe mentally, I would assume it's changed the trajectory of your career or what you did.
Yeah, I'd never had any intention of getting out of the military, but I probably would have had the same it's hard to explain. I probably wouldn't have had the work ethic and the dedication and maybe the why, right? It always comes back to why. Mr. Sinek knows this. Yeah. So the why changed and it got stronger, right? I mean, before then, maybe it was just a 9-to-5 mm-hmm. job, and I was just going there for camaraderie, to see the world, to get a GI Bill. But that becomes pretty second nature when the country's attacked. And then the why absolutely changes.
Yeah, interesting. So, I mean, I definitely, and I remember 9/11 well, too. I'm sitting around with my son, Marcus. He's getting ready. I think he was in about, I don't know, 6th or 7th grade, something like that, right before school. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, the whole world is going to change. And I didn't know how it would change other than, okay, it's going to change. And then he decides to join the military, which kind of caught me, I'd say, somewhat off guard, even though we had a patriotic family. I've had friends in the Marine Corps and so on. So then he joins the Marine Corps and insists on infantry. I think at that time, that's when, to me, I started, when your kid goes in, you know, it's like, okay, we know he's going to end up going to war based upon what's going on out there. And I think for me, that's when I'm like, okay, what can I do? I started thinking about if guys like him, guys like yourself are doing this for us, what can I do? I'm too old to go to war. I'm past that decision in my life. But what can I do? That's when I really, redoubled down my efforts on like helping my hometown. It's like, okay, well, I can just focus on my little piece where I might have a little bit of influence. But kind of my bigger why is, like, everybody's got to do their part. And I think 9/11 inspired that. My son going into the military inspired that. But, I mean, I feel like everybody kind of has to do their part, right? You know what I mean?
I agree. And yes, sir.
How do you, I mean, to me, it's like, we know that everybody doesn't feel that way, though. I mean, how does, I mean, you're human, knowing that most of America feels that way, and most of America is like that, but, I mean, not everybody is. Is the reaction to that?
I mean, the reaction is the age-old reaction of, too, like, hey, we fight, so you get, so we join the military so that others don't have to, right? We fight okay. So others don't have to. And that's absolutely there. We fight for their freedoms in there, and this gets to the July 4th discussion, that we fight for their freedoms and for their rights and for the Constitution, and so that if they elect not to or they don't want to, they don't have to. And what they do to contribute is absolutely up to them because of the military, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll be honest. I don't put much thought into it. I'm just glad that they have a choice as to what they want to do. And obviously you've taken the next level steps to do that. And if there's folks that have not done that, but they have the choice to, and I think I can live with that.
Yeah. Focus on what you can control. Right. I mean, it's kind of some basic things. Well, thinking about this, so I was thinking about heroes this time, you know, with Independence Day around the corner, having somebody who's sacrificed for our country sitting there here taking time to have a conversation with me. It makes me think about heroes, and this is an entrepreneurial show, and when I think of the word hero, I always think of people that make sacrifices, people that take a lot of risk, show the courage to, you know, go out there and do something. So I think of the entrepreneurs. They're sort of the heroes of business, heroes of the American economy, if you will. But there's no way we can compare them to what guys like you do, right? There's no way we can, even though I use the term hero in this sort of way to inspire entrepreneurship, because I believe in it. I think it's, you know, it's what our country was founded upon. But, you know, thinking about that, you're a real hero, but the word hero gets cast around all the time now. It's like guys running up and down the basketball court are heroes in some people's minds. I mean, who's a hero to you?
So, again, this goes to the, I think what we all contribute is relative, and you absolutely are a hero, right? So I think you don't have to have that conversation. It doesn't have to be ones and zeros, right? You don't have to be, a hero doesn't have to have one overall definition for everything. You're a hero in the entrepreneurial avenue. Some people be a hero in sports, if that's how they view it. Heroes to me, probably because I've been doing this for 23 years, are those folks who have made the ultimate sacrifice. Tech Sergeant Chapman, who just recently got awarded the Medal of Honor from the Air Force for his actions in Afghanistan. Those are my heroes, right? Those are the people who have made the ultimate sacrifice and lost their life defending the freedoms that we love and enjoy so much. I have idols. Maybe that's a different conversation, right?
Okay.
So I have I have idols. My I have sports idols growing up in Denver. John Elway, Tom Seaver. I'm a Mets fan. I used to love Tom Seaver. My parents, you know, my wife is one of my closest idols. But hero is a word that I probably won't throw around that much.
Yeah.
And I think I'll reserve it for those who have absolutely just paid the ultimate sacrifice. I am not a hero. I'm honored and humbled. And if somebody wants to look at it that way, but the heroes are, you know, World War I, World War II, the greatest generation, those folks that really laid it on the line.
Walk us through your career. Did you you started off as a fallback to, hey, I'm not going to do the football. I'm not going to go pro in football. So I'm going to join, and then you get serious after 9/11, more serious, I would say. But I mean, you don't get to the top of of the game, like where you're at within Beal, by just kind of going through the motions. Walk us through the turning points as to when you began to grab up this response. I call it responsibility. Maybe that's not the way you view it, but sort of taking on more. You know, obviously you earned this position. How did you earn it?
So, I'm a firm believer that we all. That we all do this as a team. And when I say team, I mean there's people looking out for me. I used to use the analogy that, you know, you, of bridge building. Like if you work hard and you're a hard worker and you can't get that bridge to the other side of that valley or that river to your objective, somebody's going to come help you with that bridge. I had a lot of that. I was a hard worker, but there was plenty of times I couldn't get that bridge across the other side of that river because of some of my own character flaws and undoings. But because I was a hard worker, I had good work ethic. I had a lot of great leaders that helped me finish that bridge and get to the other side. And that's all I can do now is just pay that back and recognize the greatness in people. And if there's a hard worker, man, you know, it's okay to fail, right? It's so failure is okay. It's okay to misstep. It's okay to not quite hit on all cylinders every day. But if you're showing the effort and you're showing the perseverance, then somebody's going to be there to help you across. There are a number of times that I should have been dismissed from the military. But I say that, and I'm probably everybody can
four.
Say it. that's a different show, Mark. There's a lot of folks that can sit here and say that, I'm certain. But I think it was because of my leaders and the care and the effort that I put forth into every job and every task, and that I had some value to add. I think they helped me to achieve where I'm at today.
So walking through your career, were there times when you were deployed? Were there times when you had to put it all out on the line and from a risk standpoint?
I think that's relative. I don't think so, right? Uh-huh. I've just been doing my job, and the team and I have flown in airplanes at 500 feet off the ground and dark and MVGs getting shot at. Is that putting on the line? I mean, maybe, but
yes,
but
yes.
Yeah. I mean, or are we just going to go to the next objective to drop off the guys go on the ground and they're going to go put it on the line? So, I mean, it's all enabler, right? We enable the next guy or growl to go do that job. I've absolutely enjoyed my time deploying. I've absolutely enjoyed the dangerous missions that we've been on as air crew in a C-130. But I think that's just what I was just told to go do. Right. So, laid it on the line. I wouldn't say I did that, no.
Interesting.
So thinking about Sacramento, you're kind of new to town, right? So in the military, you've got to be ready to move, ready to relocate at any moment.
Yes, sir.
How do you like Sacramento?
I love it. This is our third move in 3 years. We went from Florida to the UK down to Germany and out to here. And I think it was about 3 years ago today we moved from Florida. So we can do that math there. We love it.
Yeah.
I grew up in Southern California. I moved from Colorado. I moved from Denver to LA area when I was 10 or 12. And then, okay. So I haven't been up to Northern California, but we love it. It's hot. We got it. It's hot out there, but last week we drove an hour and a half. We were in Mendocino and Fort Bragg, and now 30 degrees cooler and throwing rocks in the ocean. So you drive somewhere and you got a different atmosphere, whatever you want. So we love it.
So 4th of July, you know, it's a lot of us, going to go out and drink some beer, do a barbecue, do some fireworks. So 4th of July for you, where are you going to go out and do your fireworks and drink your beer and have barbecue?
Yeah. So
do you do that on base?
No, that won't happen. I think I'm going to grab the boys and my wife will be out of town and I'm going to grab the boys and go to Tahoe and we'll just hang out with the two kids for nice. 3 or 4 days. I value each break, whether that be a 3-day weekend or a 4-day weekend or some leave. I value it because it's that whole trying to grab that continuum of balance, right? There's no such thing as balance. So you have to grab it when you can and try to gain it back a little bit. Whether that be 4th of July or just a normal 5-day, 3-day weekend, it's irrelevant to me. Just to spend time with the family is what's important. So to get away and just hang on to that.
So I'm kind of wondering, I'm getting a sense of your personality. It's very humble, soft-spoken, understated in the way you come across. How are you when you're with your kids, right? So you're a football player. You're a military guy. I have to imagine there's a little bit of a sort of a rambunctious wild man kind of side,
yeah.
Even though here you come on a media, podcast, radio show, you're toning down some of that stuff for me. I appreciate, well... I'd say let it rip, but like who are you really behind this business suit?
Right.
Who are you off camera?
So Yeah, I think if my wife was sitting here, my kids were sitting here, you'd probably have a different. They would tell you.
How old are your
things.
Kids?
9 and 5.
Two, so boys. You're wrestling these kids around. Yeah.
It's an absolute circus around there. My wife says I'm absolutely the third kid. I'm teaching both of them how to break dance. I'm doing all these things that.
Do you floss too?
No, my 9-year-old is trying to teach me how to floss. So someday we'll have a contest, and hopefully I can beat him. But yeah, I think it's. That's my trust tree, right? I mean, that's my family, and I'm absolutely not a different person, but I can. I think I like the way he's put it. You know, rip loose a little bit with those guys, and my wife certainly, who has seen 20 years now of crazy Dustin. So it's not a totally different guy, Mark, but I am a little bit. Probably knock off. I think we're all 15 years younger than what we actually are.
Yeah.
So then, when you get around my 9 and 5-year-old, I have to beat them at everything, and But I'll go to bed with a sore knee and a tore up hip, but they won't. You won't let the kids see that. So
exactly. Yeah, I got some of that with my grandkids. But I'm kind of in my line of work. I don't have to. It's okay for me to goof off a little bit. I don't have the kind of. I think it's an enormous responsibility, even though you downplay it. I think you have this enormous responsibility. I think we look up to you in a way that I think you could only imagine. Us civilians that sit here going, you know what? We wouldn't have this entrepreneurial thing if it weren't for guys like you. So, I just tip my hat to the heroes like yourself. Even though you don't call yourself one, believe me, most of us think of you that way.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing
so
your story.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.